more of Lake Effect Now, I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Tyke. Last week, we offered some suggestions for book lovers on your holiday gift list. Today, we shift to another Lake Effect tradition, our annual Games to Gift list.
James Lowder is a fiction writer and game expert. He joins us each year to share some of his picks for best ideas for the game lover on your list. He says the caveat here is that these are not electronic games. No television, monitor, or handheld device is required.
These are games you actually have to sit around a table and interact with people to play.
You actually have to talk to people.
You actually have to talk to people.
Reminds me of my childhood. So there are way more games than we can talk about, and we will publish the entire list on our website. But let's go down quickly to your top picks and why you liked them so much. And we have a bunch of different categories, starting with role-playing. Now, of course, I think of Dungeons & Dragons when
right.
I think
and
of role-playing.
That's the flagship, and there was actually a new edition of Dungeons & Dragons this year. That's terrific, the fifth edition, and that's we'll cover that a little bit on the list. There's also a game called Adventure Maximus, which is aimed at very, very young kids. And if they've ever played a video game, they'll figure out from playing this board game, card game version of role-playing how to get into it. But the game that I picked out as my top pick this year is from a Wisconsin publisher, Margaret Weiss Productions, and it's the Firefly role-playing game.
So why? Why was this the top pick for you?
Well, the great thing about this is it's a single book game. You only have to buy one book. Dungeons & Dragons, you have to buy the three main books. Adventure Maximus is kind of aimed at younger kids, and there's a lot of other role-playing games out there. But this one does it all in one book, and it has a lot of great information on how to run a storytelling kind of role-playing game as opposed to a combat game. This game isn't really about just shooting stuff up and smashing things and grabbing it. The game's really about interacting and creating a group story, which is the best part about role-playing games.
So this is good for what ages?
This one would generally be about 12 and up.
Okay. So if you're sitting around with your young teenagers,
right.
You know, and that's a perfect age.
Sure. And,
okay.
And role-playing games are really a terrific way for people to bond. You sit around and the way the dynamic works is someone comes up with a basic plot that you're going to be filling in. And you're the characters moving through this story. And how the story goes is entirely dependent upon what you create. So that gives people sitting around a table a wonderful way to interact.
What about miniatures? Now, what are miniatures in the game world?
Miniatures, actually, this goes back to at least 100 years. H.G. Wells with Little Wars, published in 1913, was about how to stage military battles using little lead soldiers, things like that. The modern version is a lot more accessible. Miniatures games have always had kind of the stigma attached to them is they take a lot of time to learn, and it takes a long time to paint all those little soldiers and get all your armies put together. And by the time you're done, you don't really feel like playing. The game that I mentioned this year, Sails of Glory, actually comes with pre-painted miniatures, and the rules are exceedingly simple. It's a matter of picking the directions you want your ships to move, and these are Age of Sail ships. You pick the direction you want them to move. You lay down your three cards, and then you flip them, and you resolve the movement using the cards. It's an extremely simple system. Anybody can play.
Okay. And again, ages?
Again, that one's probably about 10 or 12 up.
Party. Now, I'm assuming this is something where you're having more than just sitting around the table.
Right.
Yeah.
And party games, the traditional ones are like charades and things like that. And these are games that you want to have for a much broader audience. The two that really stuck out this year, one is One Night Ultimate Werewolf, which is just a wonderful evocative title.
I love the name.
It's a streamlined version of the social deduction game Werewolf, where you hand out roles to people and somebody's the werewolf and the trick of the game is to figure out who that is. This version removes the moderator, removes the elimination round where people then would have to sit around and watch and gets the whole game done in about 10 or 15 minutes. So you can play it multiple times. It's a great icebreaker. Everybody gets a role and they have special powers. And then you go through the villagers trying to figure out who the werewolf is. And if you're the werewolf, you're trying to survive the night.
Convince people that you're not.
Exactly. That's
yes,
right.
Yes, exactly.
There's also a game called Strike a Pose, which is a little more traditional. In that one, one person leaves the room. Everyone else gets a role assigned to them by a card. And they create a statue pose of that object or person. Person comes back in the room and is supposed to guess what they are.
How is that different from, say, the casual family category that you have here. Party and sort of casual sound to me sort of the same.
Party tends to be for more people.
Okay.
So Ultimate Werewolf, you can have 10 people playing. Typically, board games, card games, dice games, the average number of players is 2 to 4, 2 to 5. You're lucky if it'll fit 6.
Okay. So you have two listed here, Sushi Go and Pandemic the Cure, two very different – maybe the pandemic from the sushi.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not. Yeah.
Sushi Go is a wonderful card game. It's played out in 3 rounds. You get a hand of different kinds of sushi and you have to decide which one to put down in front of you to try and get points. You get points for having 2 tempura. You don't get any points for 1 tempura. You've got to have 2. So you get your hand of cards. You select the one you're going to put down in front of you. You pass the rest of the cards along to the person on your right. Everybody simultaneously reveals what sushi they picked, which leads to people discovering, oh no, we're all trying for tempura this time. We're all trying for dumplings, and it creates that kind of conflict. So everybody has to redirect their hands at that point. At our household, we've played that game at least a dozen times in the last week because it's fast, it's fun, you can pick it up at any time and play in about 10 or 15 minutes.
And it sounds like this one is really age-friendly all the way across.
Yes,
yeah, you
yes.
could be pretty young and you can also be in your dotage and enjoy it as
oh,
well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
and that's one of the advantages of these games. Unlike some of the kids' games you've played in the past, things like Candyland, which if you've ever had to play Candyland a lot with kids – it gets trying after a time. These are games that are actually challenging for adults too.
Tell me about Pandemic the Cure because that sounds very, very different from
yes,
Sushi.
Yes, it is very different. Sushi Go is very light, kind of a whimsical game. Pandemic the Cure is a dice game. It's a variation of the Pandemic board game. And so it's a cooperative game, which means that the players all win or everyone loses. And in the dice game, you're assigned a role. Say you're a dispatcher or a scientist. And that gives you special powers that only you can do. And you and the other players then cooperate to try and find cures for the 4 diseases before they cause pandemics or outbreaks. You get too many outbreaks, too many people get infected, everyone loses. So the game is really a matter of putting their heads together and figuring out the best way to solve the problems.
Learning how to work cooperatively.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. And there are several really great cooperative games. The Pandemic board game is one of them. The reason the dice game is more of a family game, Pandemic the board game is a little more complicated. It's a little harder to win. The dice game actually plays in about half an hour, which is terrific for people with short attention spans as opposed to an hour or two. And it really will work for kids about 8 and up.
Well, speaking of kids, you have a category here, young kids. And again, I just love the name Robot Turtles.
Yes. And the reason I love this game is it actually is for kids 4 and up. And if you've ever tried to find games for really young kids that are more than just matching games, it's very difficult. And this one actually teaches programming to
really?
4-year-olds.
Wow. In some ways, that's terrifying.
It is. And by the time they're 6, they will be better than their parents.
Oh, of course.
The goal of this one isn't cooperative, but the game isn't over until everyone reaches their goal, so everyone wins. It takes away the competition, which is great for playing with younger kids too. You use cards, left, right, forward, to direct your turtle to go across the board to reach your goal.
Actually, it sounds fun.
It does. It does. And that's one of the advantages of games like this. Parents will not be pulling their hair out after playing it for the 15th time.
Or 16th or 28th.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you also have a category here for gamers and hobbyists. So what differentiates these kinds of games?
Those kind of games tend to run longer.
Okay.
They may take 2 to 3 hours to get through, sometimes a lot longer. There are really detailed war games that take days to finish. They also tend to appeal to an older audience. So these are going to be games that are likely 12 and up. And they have a level of strategy to them that invites people to play them again and again and look at them as a hobby, look at them as something you want to invest time in to discover all the nuances of it.
So you have two here, Dead of Winter and Doomtown Reloaded. So start with Dead of Winter.
Dead of Winter is a zombie game, and it's inevitable on these lists it seems like we're going to have zombie games show up. There have been a number of really great ones in the last few years. This one is a cooperative game, so all of the players are controlling survivors in a post-apocalyptic landscape. And you're given a common goal and everyone's supposed to work together. The thing that's different about this is you're also given an individual goal that may or may not conflict with the group's larger goal. And no one else knows what you're trying to accomplish. That's only you. So you're working toward that goal and you only win if that happens.
Your personal goal.
In certain games, the group will win. In other games, individuals will come out triumphant because they reached their individual goal and kind of trumped the larger group from finishing up. What really is unique for this as a board game is they have something called crossroad cards, which are essentially narrative elements. If certain conditions happen, you get one of these cards and it will tell you this is how the story of this version of the board game, this episode of the board game, is playing out. And then you get to decide as an individual player where you go with that story element.
Wow, I like that.
Which is terrific.
Yeah,
that's a really clever mechanic.
That really is. How does that differ from Doomtown Reloaded?
Well, Doomtown Reloaded is a new version of what was a collectible card game in the late 90s. Collectible card games like Magic the Gathering or Pokemon were all the rage. The real downside of those collectible games is the Richie Rich factor, we call it. It's the idea that somebody who has a lot of money and really wants to put the time into it can go and buy all of the really rare collectible cards and have an unbeatable deck. So that makes them of limited fund for groups. And so the industry as a whole has been moving away from those and toward an expandable game model where your base set, everyone has all the same cards, and they'll release expansions that add, again, all of the same cards. Everyone has access to the same cards when they play. Well, Doomtown Reloaded, it's reloaded that way. It used to be a collectible card game. Now it's a fixed deck, expandable card game. And it's a terrific game. It's combat in the Weird West in a setting called Deadlands, which is really rich. It's been filled out with stories and different role-playing modules and everything else. And you are fighting to control a town. And you're using the cards to resolve gunfights or call down hexes on your opponents. And it uses a poker hand mechanic, which is really neat, as well as some chips. And it's really a terrific game.
And again, we're talking slightly older.
Yes.
Kids. Yeah.
Because there's more of a strategy involved to playing this. Again, at 12 and older. But really older young adults, older people are going to find the game has a really a great amount of strategy the longer you play.
Now, I know you have a top pick and we're going to save that one for last. I want to get to Stocking Stuffers. So these are obviously smaller games.
Sure, around $10 or $15,
right.
Things like that. And card games make terrific stocking stuffers. Last year's top pick, Love Letter, a great option there. The card game Hanabi, which we talked about last year and which was actually kind of rare last year, hard to come by, is now out there in mass quantities finally. And that's the one where you're creating a fireworks display with the cards. That one's a terrific one. There's another new game out called Falling, where all of the players are falling out of the sky for whatever reason, and you're trying to be the last person to hit the ground. So you've got cards where you're handing people anvils and things like that.
To speed up their –
Exactly, or to slow down your – and that's about a $10 game.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun. And there's another game called Ogre. Last year, and this is a game that's been around since the 70s, Steve Jackson Games created this gigantic over $100 box set. This year, they went back to the roots to how the game was originally released and did a $2.95 version of it. So it's under $3. You get little cardboard chits that you get to cut out and it's downscaled quite a bit from the $100 version. But it's still a really fun game. It comes with five different scenarios for this fighting a giant tank against a military outpost and you know which one is going to survive.
Before we get to your top pick, I just quickly want to ask, have you seen any shifts in the types of games that people are interested, things that the industry is looking at that they weren't at this time last year?
Well, last year there were a lot of card games. This year it's dice games. There are things like Bang, which was a card game and it's been translated into a dice game. We talked about Pandemic. That's a dice game now. There's a Mars Attacks dice game based on the 1960s trading cards. There's a Dice Masters, and that one is collectible. It's a superhero role-playing combat game. So you play the X-Men and the Avengers and get to roll tons and tons of dice.
So King of New York.
Yes.
Why is this your top pick and what kind of game is it?
Well, in King of New York, you are a giant monster hoping to be crowned King of New York by stomping buildings and punching all the other giant monsters who are trying to horn in on your action. It's an expanded version of a game called King of Tokyo that I mentioned last year, which was a dice and card mechanic, essentially, again, giant monsters fighting it out for control of Tokyo. But designer Richard Garfield added a few mechanics to it. So there are buildings to stomp now, but every time you stomp a building, you end up with military units. And there are specific locations on the board where you get advantages depending on which cards are in play. And those make it more than just a simple combat game. King of Tokyo is a lot of fun, but it is basically a combat game. King of New York has a lot more strategy to it, and that's the reason it came out as my top pick this year, because it does have that combat mechanic. It does play really quickly. You can get a game in half an hour, 45 minutes. But people looking for something with a little more strategy will find the more moving parts here make this a really superior game.
All right. Well, a lot to choose from if you are interested in games. We will have the entire list that you've put together, James, on the website. Thanks so much for coming in, and it is always a pleasure to have you in the studio.
Happy holidays.
James Lauder has worked in fiction and hobby game publishing for more than two decades. He's the editor of the award-winning anthologies Hobby Games, The 100 Best, and Family Games, The 100 Best. The anthologies feature short essays by the top game designers and publishers from around the world, sharing their personal selections for the most enjoyable and innovative card games, board games, miniature games, and role-playing games of the last century.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just playing Parcheesi. No, Lauder is also our resident game expert and annually compiles our list of top games to gift. You can find the fifth annual list at wuwm.com/Lake Effect. Back to my game of Parcheesi. That is Lake Effect for a Monday. I'm Mitch Tye.
And I'm Bonnie North in a tough game of cribbage right now. Thanks so much for tuning in. I hope you'll be with us again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect. It's on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee.
Stay tuned. Fresh Air comes your way next. It's 11 o'clock.